My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And we're just recording a little wrapper thing in case you're wondering why this is on your feed or the news didn't reach you. As we're recording this last week, we lost Jeremy Greer, one of our friends who we met through our shows, through Bonfireside Chat, and who was a host on the network and everything. And we thought people, you know, one of the things about Jeremy is, in addition to being a close friend, he was great.
Yeah.
He was really good on podcasts, very funny, very insightful, plugged up a lot of holes in our knowledge base.
Yes.
And stuff. So we thought, and he, you know, I wrote a big thing on Patreon about this, but one of the things about Jeremy is he loved podcasts.
Yep.
He absolutely loved this medium. He did as many as we do, and he's only one person.
Yep.
We thought we would rerun the Jeremy files, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, not to be confused with non-human biologics. So these are the Jeremy appearances. If you want to listen to kind of a chronology of him being on the shows.
Yeah.
And revisit those appearances.
Yeah. Just go back, listen to him being great. You know, just wanted to do this in remembrance.
Yeah. He cared about having his podcast stuff around.
Yep.
After he passed. So, you know, we're doing our part for his Duck Feed appearances here, I guess.
Yes.
And in case anybody wanted to listen back, save you the trouble of having to search through the archives.
Yeah, yeah. So,
yeah, give a listen.
These will be hitting the feed. I don't know if it's going to be all at once or kind of all in rapid succession. But yeah, just that is why you're seeing this stuff.
Yeah. And if you're not interested in that and everything, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just ignore them. That's the thing. But if you are, here they are. And yeah.
Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
And I'm Jeremy Greer.
And you're listening to a very special episode of Bonfireside Chat, the kindled favorite. As you can hear, I'm not joined by Cole Ross. He is fine.
I have killed him and I'm taking over his life. Single white female style.
That's what we mean by he's fine. you've been upgraded, Ross. I'm just kidding. We wouldn't kill Cole. We wouldn't kill Cole and have... Man, single white female... was a movie that I remember thinking, in retrospect, it is so gross and kind of like sexual assaulty.
Yes.
When I was young and was just like way into any kind of Cinemax with any kind of nudity, there were parts of Single White Female I legit thought were pretty hot. There's like kind of there's an aggressive blowjob scene in that movie that like, I remember just being like, whoa. you know,
yeah. Don't mind. But that in a spank bank.
Yeah. It was in that bank. As you can tell, this is not an episode about, Aerithyll. This is an episode, brought to you by my Kickstarter backers for the Souls of Darkness. As we round out about 1 year of Souls of Darkness, I'm wrapping up the final rewards and, through some kind of alchemy, one of the rewards has transformed into a few bonus episodes of Bonfireside Chat that are taking the form of top tens and bottom tens, of various things. So, as you heard the last time, you know, a couple months ago, I had Allison Baker on, friend of the show and personal friend, to do top 10 areas. And I'm doing 4 total of these shows, and I decided to have Jeremy Greer on for bottom 10 areas.
They're worst areas in all of the Dark Souls games.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we're not counting Bloodborne, so Gary can't just list all 10 of them as being Chalice Dungeons. So.
We are counting Bloodborne. I'm counting Bloodborne. I've got some Bloodborne. I joked about this. We're not doing it, but I really like the idea of having all my 10 of mine be chalices. And then after I ran out of the actual chalices, I mean, which I wouldn't, it could be like lower Thumeru, but just being random ones I'd plugged in. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Capital H, lowercase g, X72 is so bad.
Just finding random glyphs online is like, this ladder doesn't go anywhere. 0 out of 10.
Jeremy, how might a listener to the show know you?
I have been on many episodes of Bonfireside Chat. I have my own podcast called Don't Give Up Skeleton that's related to Dark Souls, where I interview people about their origins with the Dark Souls games. I talk Dark Souls all the time. And, oh, I run Dark Souls Haters, too, which is actually getting a little bit of, like, traffic this month. People have sent me hate mail for the first time in, like, 2 months. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
That's a... Because we talk a lot about in Bonfireside Chat, like, what we're going to do once Souls runs out.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Souls Haters, what are you going to do once... It's not like there's, like, Witcher haters or, like, Final Fantasy haters. Like, it's going to be hard to find something to transition that to.
I know someone that started a Rocket League hate mail blog.
Oh, gotcha.
Because I got a lot of Rocket League hate mail when that game first... And that was just called... I think it was niceshot.tumblr.com. but I don't know. Like, I might just start and just see if any of the Tumblr kids notice. I might just start from the very, very beginning and just start reblogging all the original stuff and see how long I can get away with that.
Probably a while.
Yeah, just recycling content. Yeah, it's been going for like 4 years now. Like, there's probably a ton of shit in there that nobody's ever seen. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you're not going through a deep dive. Because it's the kind of unsavory internet place where you can't just sit there and read that all day. Like, yeah, I had to dip in. You know, and that has no bearing on you as your quality as a steward of it. It has everything to do with the fact that it's a lot of people calling each other slurs.
We had a real funny moment where I walked up to your booth in Austin, and Lobos Jr., noted Dark Souls famous person, Lobos Jr. was standing there, and he like turned around and you introduced me as the guy that ran Dark Souls Haters, and I thought, man, if there was anything else you could have pulled from my resume besides Dark Souls Haters. You could have been like that guy that punched that dude in the dick in eighth grade, Jeremy Greer. And I've been like, yep, that's me. Anyway.
Oh, well. You'll forgive me.
I will. I have.
So. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. So this is very informal. It's going to be very similar to the Allison episode where we're just kind of going to go back and forth on our bottom 10 lists. And probably be about an hour or so, but we're just going to kind of talk about our areas, briefly talk about like what we don't like about them, discuss them. Similar to the Allison episode, I imagine there's some crossover, so that's something to consider. And then in maybe a week or two, the other two episodes we're going to be doing are the revised top 10 bosses now that Dark Souls 3 and the DLC for Bloodborne is out. And then a bottom 10 bosses. So let's get started. Jeremy, did you end up coming up with an honorable mention?
I think I did. Let me just count real quick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, I did. So my honorable mention is going to be the Grave of Saints from Dark Souls 2.
Grave of Saints. Yeah. What do you not like about the Grave of Saints, and why is it an honorable mention and not in your bottom 10?
I actually kind of liked it for just rat brewing purposes. Like, the PvP side was fun, but just everything in this area looks god awful. Like, it's dark, the textures suck. I think like the traps that you build as a rat brew person are a lot less interesting than the stuff you can do in the Doors of Pharos, which is kind of a similar arena. And I guess the boss is cool of this area, and I know it's not top bosses or whatever, but like a bunch of tiny rats, I just don't give a fuck about. So this but it wasn't quite so bad as it was like, as I was building this list, I had to eliminate some because it was just like areas that were just too small to be areas. But this was just like, okay, you're not quite bad enough to make it on the main list, but I still want to call you out a little bit.
Throw a little shade that way. I gotcha. I totally understand. These real quick before we get further on, just some ground rules. So we kind of this is all super loosey-goosey. There's no governing body for this. So where areas are combined and stuff is just kind of up to discretion. You know, if it made the making the list easier, you know, it's up to us whether we want to combine things like the Great Hollow and Ash Lake, which is not on my list. But if it was, I could say that / that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I ended up not putting things together. So there's a couple areas that, end up mostly not putting things together. There's one separation because I think they're bad for different reasons. But we'll get into it. My honorable mention is very similar. And that's a Belfry Soul from Dark Souls 2.
Really?
Yes. Which is, I like, I the Iron Keep is not on there for me, but Belfry Soul, is so one. I feel like that idea of that arena is done better elsewhere, which is very similar to your kind of charge with the Rat Bro Covenant. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the Bellkeepers over in Sinner's Rise is kind of cooler. There's no boss. And mostly because you have to, once you go into it, you have to go through all of it to get out. You can't go back the way you came because of a waist-high ledge. And that drives me up the wall.
Ooh, I have some waist high edges, ledges in my future level.
If you like ledges, you will like this podcast. Belfry Soul, which is just like, it's kind of pretty. You can do some cool shit there, but it's not as fun as the Bell Keepers in the other side of the world, I think. Okay. So, but not so bad that it got on the list. Number 10.
Number 10 for me is the Valley of the Drakes.
Valley of the Drakes.
This is like just a tiny piece of connective tissue that doesn't really matter, that has some kind of goofy ass lightning spewing dragon enemies that I don't really get behind. I mean, it's pretty much just a ledge. Like, it's just a cliff ledge this time. It's just a whole area made of ledge. Not even like multiple ledges. Just one ledge, a bridge, and like an undead dragon. That's all you got. And it's pretty tiny too. And there's basically no reason for this shortcut to exist. Like, you can get into New Londo in better ways. There's other bonfires besides the one in Darkroot that connects into the elevator. Like, this whole place just feels like it just doesn't make sense. I don't know why it has a title card.
I don't know. I like it geographically because it connects to so many different places, but I don't like that it has a title card. And like, something that I tried to, and that would be true of Belfry Soul as well. Like, it was tricky to decide what I wanted to include where that was the problem.
Yeah.
Like the fact that, and that's going to be a big thing with bosses too, because like a theory I've been throwing around as far as Dark Souls 2 goes, which is like, I think that people would not hate the bosses of Dark Souls 2 if they weren't called bosses. You know, so like, imagine going into Earthen Peak or whatever, and the Covetous Demon is just a weird monster at the bottom of this pit.
Sure.
And it's like, what was that thing? Like, that's real weird. You know, maybe it drops a piece of equipment instead of a soul, and that's how you get its story. But then people wouldn't be like, oh, it's a bad boss because it's too easy.
And they did a lot of this in Dark Souls 3 with like the, what's the dude on the bridge that drops the thing that you get?
The giant. Yeah, those things. So they do that kind of, and I think that's kind of a smarter idea instead of calling them bosses.
Yeah.
And this is like, shouldn't have been called an area. That almost made it on my list as well, for that exact same reason. Instead, my number 10 is Smoldering Lake from Dark Souls 3.
Okay. Getting right into it.
There's a few Dark Souls 3 areas on here, but they're not my number one. So Smoldering Lake, which is a big fiery emptiness. I don't know why there are crabs here. I pretty much everything down this path, preview Demon Ruins 2 is on this list as well. Everything down this path is stupid and bad. I don't understand how it fits in the, like, I get that it's Ash Lake.
Sure.
There's spoilers for this podcast. FYI, I forgot we're past the spoiler wall, but like, this is actually could potentially be the first thing on the network that talks about this callback. I get that this is Ash Lake. You know, this is what happens when the ash trees are burned. That's kind of a cool image. Everything else about it doesn't make sense, and I don't like it. So like, the gigantic Avalon, the gigantic crossbow that's sniping you the entire time, makes no fucking sense. I don't know what that's doing there. It's not very mechanically interesting to go up and turn that thing off. As you mentioned, you were the first person who clued me into this, but you can't use it as an invader.
Which sucks. Is super lame. Yeah. if you're going to put something like that in, at least let me troll people with it.
And there's kind of a boss fight to this, like a little miniature boss fight, other than the Demon King, which we'll talk about a little bit later. This Karthus sandworm thing that, like, I think totally doesn't work. Like, it is... As a melee character, at the very least, like, it just, it's going to pop up right next to you and knock you down. And it's just like an Estus tax. To get it. You can trick the Avalon into killing it, which is kind of cool. But other than that, there's just like so little to this area. And I don't know why the things that are here are here.
It's also kind of ugly. Like the whole ground, like, smoldering thing that they went for. I think you can get that impression, but it just kind of looks bad too. Like, I don't know. It's not aesthetically pleasing, even while it's not mechanically pleasing you.
Even if it's supposed to be like the grandeur of Ash Lake kind of brought low, or of the arch trees brought low, or what have you, they could have sold that a lot better, I think.
Yeah.
Which is true of this entire section. What do you got for number 9?
Number 9 is, speaking of waist high ledges, the Shrine of Winter.
This is Shrine of Winter.
It really fucked with me to make this list, because I really wanted to go to, like, again, areas that don't deserve title cards. And this is the only one that I think, besides, I mean, the Valley of the Drakes counts, but this is the, like, the smallest area in any of the Souls games. And it really hammers home. And Allison, as I was talking to Allison about this earlier, she mentioned this, the fact that like half of Dark Souls 2 is strictly about you getting past this waist-high ledge that you can't just climb over. Like, you have to go defeat the four Lord Souls to get into this gate, and then you go on the other side, and it's literally just like a rock in your way. It's just
That's so stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, it looks incredibly cool, and it just is not delivered upon at all. Like, I know you eventually teleport back to a DLC, but, like, I just, like, this thing looked so incredibly cool. Like, that was the only one in the game before the DLC came out. And I thought it was going to be something super interesting. And then there's that weird mechanic with earning 1 million souls plus the new game level that you're in to just walk through it regardless. That doesn't make any goddamn sense to me. Like, I just...
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just not into the Toronto winner.
No, it's not very good. And it's got... There's a little bit more past it. There's that little walk-up, you know, on your way into Dring Lake, which, like, is... Like, when you go into Dring Lake, when you leave here, I think it's very cool. So that connective tissue I have kind of like a little bit of goodwill for just because of that. But that waist high wall thing is such a problem because I get it. It's video games, you know, you're not going to have, but it would have been so easy for them just to make a wall.
Yeah, no. What's the difference? what's the limitation there?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you go up to that waist high bit of rubble, you can see past it and you can see an item. And I think that's supposed to be the idea is like, oh, you know, to go there. But it just ends up being frustrating that that happens to be right next to, you know, just make it a door that you need a key or something, you know, so it had at least a sensible way to get past it.
Or just put there's so many different ways you can handle that without making it seem like my character just can't literally, anyway, waist high walls.
It also has a problem with the same problem as Valley of the Drakes where like, it's such a cool evocative name that when you get there, you think you're in for some cool shit. And then when you're immediately not, it's a disappointment.
And as we both can agree on, like, most of the time, ice levels in Souls games are, like, the coolest shit in the world. Like, snow levels are the coolest shit in the world, and that's been proven. So when you get to the Shrine of Winter and just realize there's just a shrine, there is no winter, like, that's kind of a disappointment.
Yeah. Who was it named by somebody named Winter? Like, I don't... It's pretty silly. Like, that's a good one. I went back and forth, and this is not saying... I tried not to do too many connective tissue areas just because it's, you know, but that would have been on my list too if I didn't make an arbitrary rule to myself to count them out.
I went back through and like redid this list about an hour and a half ago to take some of those off because I've started feeling kind of bad about them. So, what's your number 9?
Number 9 is 2-2 from Demon Souls.
The only
Demon Souls thing on this. I think this is, I recently replayed Demon Souls and it's been a really positive experience. I think this is the worst designed level in Demon Souls by far. If you recall, this is like after the spider. You can go right immediately and do that like really harrowing, really kind of poorly signaled shortcut of falling down to the Flame Lurker, or you can go left forever into like 1,000 tedious tunnels of those like giant bugs that you can you can't really block through, so, and they have infinite hit points, so you just end up hitting them, backing away, hitting them, backing away for eternity until your weapon degrades. It's really confusing, like the layout from that. There's like 2 levels for some reason. There are all these weird little crystal lizard dead ends, and like the reason it's not worse on the list is because like it does feel like a mine. But as a level, it's like they forgot to make it fun to navigate.
Mm-hmm. There should have been some sort of shortcut in the middle of that stuff. Like once you get down to the lava lake, there should have been a shortcut back to somehow. Cause like that's just way too long to navigate by itself.
Making runs into the left side of 2-2 is so obnoxious. and there's like tantalizing kind of glimpses of mechanics they're going to do. Like when you first get up there, there are like 2 mine carts show up with those exploding balls. You know, they're mining for explosions. Those are really cool. They show up like way later. There's like 2 of them later. But that could have been a cool mechanic, like these mine carts moving through that have these mines on them. Mm-hmm. So they're like mine carts.
Mine carts. Yeah, I see what you did there.
I that would have been kind of cool, you know? Instead, it's just like one passage full of 1,000 dudes with like tons of blind drops, you know, or just an infinite morass of tunnels that loop on each other and kind of suck with a bunch of enemies, too many hit points. So I wanted to at least have some kind of, you know, there's no Souls game where I like every single area. So I wanted to have a representative in from each game at the very least. And this is my least favorite in Demon's Souls.
Well, no. my number 8 is from Dark Souls 1, and it's the Crystal Caves.
Crystal Caves. Yeah. Almost made it on my list as well.
This, you know, my problem with the Crystal Caves is it looks neat. Like the whole crystal thing is cool. It's but it's filled with just like totally skippable stuff. So it just turns it into an extraordinarily long boss run if you happen to die to Seath. Like, it just takes forever. Even if you like, even if you have all of the invisible paths memorized, even if you have like, you know where to dodge across the enemies, you're still just running past shit into a fog gate. And it's just, again, my problem with Souls levels is when they make something boring. The Moonlight Butterflies are almost impossible to fight in this area. Like, I would have liked to seen, I like the idea of bringing a boss back into and making it a normal enemy. That's very, very empowering. And they pull it off successfully with the Capra demons. But with, it's almost impossible to fight these things. Like, you have to, you're navigating up on a narrow, like, crystal ledge. Again, it comes back to the ledges, Jerry.
Yeah.
If it comes, if there's a ledge, I'm gonna not like it. So, like, it just, you know, there's that whole blue slab over there, which I've played a lot of Dark Souls, and I know all of the tricks to get that thing over there, but it is still almost impossible for me to get over there. Like, it's, I don't like it.
Yeah, that was nearly on my list, too. Like, I think that it's very pretty, and I like areas that have a strong concept. Usually that'll go a long way with me, but, like, there's, like, a lack of confidence in the concept when they patched in the developer message that shows you that they're invisible paths. There, and it's because, like, they realized it was a bad idea. You know, so it's like they didn't commit to it, which I almost would have liked more. It's also a game that's kind of broken hit detection and geometry wise. Like, so many times when you're running on these crystals, your character's just going to start sliding towards the edge for no reason.
Yeah.
At an angle that defies gravity. Like, it ends up being, you know, really, really, and when you die, 100%, very, very frustrating.
You know, going back to the invisible path, they did the same thing in Dark Souls 3 with that path to Yorshka.
Yeah.
But they even like committed less because you can't fall off that ledge.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
bonkers.
It's just so anyway, sorry.
All the stuff, I mean, we're going to talk about it. All the stuff with Yorshka, I think, is kind of like, I have not bought one explanation of Yorshka other than like kind of related to Priscilla, kind of related to Gwendolyn.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, got some tentacles, I guess.
Yeah, you know, because there's not a good explanation. So that stuff with Yorshka ended up being kind of a disappointment in an area I otherwise really like. I agree with you about Crystal Caves. Almost made it on my list. I'm glad our lists are so different so far. Again, turning into a parody of myself, my number 8 is from Dark Souls 3, and it is the Consumed King's Garden. Not to be confused, not the Untended Graves. I think Untended Graves is good and is past this. The actual Consumed King's Garden, though, I think is a pretty bullshit area. It's really short. It's movement and, you know, hindering, and you're just fighting those gigantic pus of man things, which I hate fighting. I think that they're really unfun to fight, really hard to read their attacks, and then it's over. So there's no sense of like, oh, like, you know, the coolest thing that can happen in a Dark Souls game, I think, in an area, is that you move through an area and you or Jeremy? Okay, I just want to make sure you're still there. Sorry.
Yeah, we're good.
You move through an area and you get a sense of the person who has authorship over the area. You know, like, it's like, oh, you move, at the very least, when you move through the Duke's Archives and the Crystal Caves, you do get a sense of Seath, right? Like, you know, there's these crystal butterflies and these golems that he's been using to experiment with and stuff. But you don't get any real sense of Osiris through moving through this. You just see slime and pusses of man, and then that's it. And then it's over. So
I have a pretty big issue with this level because they put two pretty beefy knights right in front of the boss. So
yeah.
Which to me is just basically like, if you can't, you know, juke around these dudes, they're just like here to take some Estus away from you. Like, that's all they're there for.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a bullshit thing, especially when most of this game has like bonfires right next to the boss doors, or at least like clear runs. So
yeah, they're setting up. It's not necessary that you have easy runs, but if you have easy runs for every boss fight in the game, the one time you don't have them, you're gonna notice it, you know, or the few times you don't have it. So, what's your number 7?
My number 7 is, and this was worded weird on the wiki when I pulled this, so it just says Flame Lurker Archstone, but I think this is the Dragon God level. Like, this is the last level. So, like, and I know this is technically a boss too, but I included it because this, to me, even more so than like the boss of Lost Eye, the Bed of Chaos, is just the most garbage, boring. Like, you're literally going from place to place, pushing a button, going to the next. It's like the antithesis of all Dark Souls levels to me. Like, it's just, it's super linear. You have to do these weird mechanical things to make it through. It's a lot of one-shot kills if you don't, and it's just extraordinarily boring. So
yeah. It's what it does is, the idea behind this area, which and the boss, which I like, which is that like you don't want him to see you, so it's kind of a stealth level, you know, a stealth boss. But it's so hard to keep your eye on the dragon and what you need to do because it's an over the shoulder game. Like it's a game with a fixed perspective and not an omniscient overhead perspective. Mm-hmm. Like this, I think this level would actually work pretty well if you saw from above and you could just see when the dragon's eyes changed, and then you were able to move your guy behind a little pillar.
Somebody needs to mod Metal Gear Solid 5 and to put Dragon God in that world, because then you can, yeah. Then I would have enough tools to deal with the Dragon God in a much different way. I would have a lot more fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't dislike it as much as you do. I actually kind of like that area, but I get what you mean for sure.
What's your number 7?
The Iron Passage from the Crown of the Iron King DLC.
Okay.
This is the little run up to Double Smelter Demon. Mm-hmm. I like the Smelter Demon boss fight, both forms of it. Mm-hmm. Like, I know people really hate that boss. I actually like it. But the run up here, you know, all three DLCs, the Dark Souls 2 DLCs, shot themselves in the foot from being like 100% good. Like, they're all, I like those areas quite a bit, but each of them has one area that's kind of bullshit. And this is not the most bullshit of them, but this one is definitely boring and tedious to get through. And it is a really boring boss run that kind of dares you into either methodically clearing it every time, which is going to be an Estus tax, and you're going to end up at the end, you know, with fewer resources, or just trying to find a way to juke past every enemy and run past them in a way that I think is far less successful than something like the Black Gulch or even like the Dragon Shrine. Like, there are areas mm-hmm. where it is more interesting and more open that, like, just running past enemies feels like a better alternative than it does here.
They stack the enemies so far against you, too. Like, they've got melee enemies covering that are, you know, that are backed up by ranged enemies that are kind of bullshit to begin with. So just trying to get through the level normally, quote unquote, just like if you're actually going to clear it, is just a huge pain in the ass. And the other big problem is at the end of this, there's literally no reward. Like, I mean, you get the dad mask from Dark Souls 1. Like, woohoo.
Yeah. Like, it's very similar. You don't know whether this is going to be the dumb, like, DLC co-op. Because the whole idea behind those areas was that you would do them co-op, right? Because even if you don't have the DLC, you can summon in people who don't have the DLC.
Yeah, that was the thing, which doesn't exist anymore because, you know, Scholar of the First Sin came along. So
Exactly. So this idea of being able to, like, this is balanced for co-op. I can kind of respect that. It just doesn't lend itself to how I play. Like, I only bring in people for bosses, really, mm-hmm. And only if I really have to. So, like, it's a little bit on me for resisting the way it's designed, but it's also not a very fun area to play. So that is why Iron Passage is my number 7 worst Soulsborne area.
Well, that's going to bring us right to number 6 for me, which is Cave of the Dead, which is the...
Oh, hey!
Which is the, like, optional, you know, super difficult co-op challenge from the Crown of the Sunken King DLC. And this thing is just, like... I think a very frustrating thing to me on this is that they make you drop through these holes. There's literally no way to get back where you came from. Like, even if you were like, oh, I want to go back because, like, I left my co-op partner up there. Like, there's just no way you can do it. You're just shouting into the ether or just gesturing silently to nobody.
Yeah.
And it's just full of, like... Again, it's that thing where they just put enemies after enemies after enemies. And I really am resistant to saying, like, oh, these developers are copying and pasting things. But it was like, okay, we built this level with, like, 7 alcoves. So let's get 14 of these knights that they've been fighting and put 2 in each alcove. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. And, like, the whole run-up just kind of... It's filled with enemies, but it's still very easy to run past everything. So that's kind of makes the whole thing pointless. And then there's... at the end of it, I know we're not talking bosses, but man, like, at the end of it is just the most garbage boss fight probably across all 5 Souls games.
Yeah, there's the gang squad.
Yeah, which is just, oh, yawn.
Who's I don't like that area either. I don't, my roommate Will, who has been on the show and is a Souls guy, really loves it because he does PvP stuff there. Mm-hmm. And he says it's really fun to do, you know, invade people there, which I can kind of see. And, like, the one thing about that, the only reason why that didn't end up on my, like, that's not on my list at all, that mm-hmm. specific, I don't think it's good, but it's that I got really good at running past it, so it just ended up being going down a little easier than the other two, mm-hmm. But it's not good. It's a way about, like, getting spit in the face, you know, by those statues, those statue turtles, and that sucks. That's really rough. So we are, my number 6 is Demon Ruins from Dark Souls 1.
Some Dark Souls so, 1, okay.
Yes. which is, you know, I don't, like, surprise, surprise, again, to spoilers, like, Lost Izalith is not on my list. People hate Lost Izalith. I kind of like it as a level. And I don't associate the boss fight, you know, that if I'm just looking at areas, I don't mind Lost Izalith, especially after the lava. Demon Ruins, though, I kind of do, mostly because it doesn't, like, add up to anything. Like, the copy-paste part of it doesn't bother me. You know, I try not to say that often either. And I like fighting Taurus demons and Capra demons after doing this. But the fact that they're not laid out very carefully, like, they're just, like, arranged like soldiers. And to actually fight them, you have to pull them all tediously or just run past them is really obnoxious. I also really hate those wall worm enemies. It's the only place where those appear. And I
really
hate
like
those things.
Dudes. I like, do you really? This dude. Yeah. They're so much fun. Yeah. I mean, they're assholes, but I kind of have an affinity for that design for some reason.
They spit stuff that degrades your equipment. Like, I don't know. I hate that mechanic so much. It's also, this is a big reason is, everyone talked about how Blighttown killed the performance on their games. This is where my performance always tanks for some reason or another. So that is why Demon Ruins from Dark Souls 1 is my number 6.
Number 6. Well, that moves us into number 5, which I'm actually going to go to back to Dark Souls 2 and go to the Crown of the Iron King for the memory of the old Iron King. So this is once you finish everything basically in the game, and you're able to access these memories with the memory heart. I don't remember what the fuck it's called. It doesn't matter.
Something like that.
This is just like a total bullshit run. This thing is filled with... where did everybody settle on the pronunciation of Alon? Is it Alon or Alone?
Alon is what I always say. Alon. Yeah.
So it's filled with Alon knights that seem to like aggro you from across the map. When it's got all those weird, crazy salamanders. And like it's... almost impossible to run past everything the way that everything's set up without taking damage. So again, you're going right back into like just, oh, hey, let's take some Estus away from you before a boss fight. It's not rewarding at all to pull them one by one. Like you kind of get to that situation where, because the Alon Knights take a long time to kill even one-on-one. Like they've got significant health, especially if you go into New Game Plus. And it's, you know, it's basically like, it's not an interesting level at all. Like it's just some squares. Like it's just a series of squares with a hallway that connect to
big rooms with great gratings on the floor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just, so it's just kind of boring. The boss fight at the end of this is absolutely amazing. And if this was top 10 boss fights, I probably would have Sir Alone on it. But like the level to get there was, I remember thinking when the DLC came out, like this is the least fun I've ever played, at least fun I've ever had playing Dark Souls, trying to get to that boss.
Wow. Yeah, it's not good. I don't think I had as hard a time with it as you did, for sure. But it is, it's not good. especially, like, how I play, because, like, you know, you develop a style playing these games, and, like, I tend to play pretty conservatively and cautiously. Like, that's, and it's not, you know, it's not because my E-penis is not good. My E-penis is thick and round and good.
You got to take that E-Viagra, son. Come on.
Yeah. My E-Johnson is actually good. It's good, guys. But the reason why I play cautiously is because it's very satisfying to me to like slowly clear these things. I only do it once, you know, but everything must die on my first playthrough. Like I have to actually do all the things and how whatever that takes, you know. So I would rather do that, you know, pull things and do it slowly than 1,000 times trying to be aggressive. And luckily, I think that maybe I just had a good experience where I didn't have to do this very often. Because Alon is a tough boss fight, but not nearly as tough as Fume Knight, which I kind of like. It was like training in gravity for us. So maybe I just had to go through it once. But there's some reason why I think that you're right. Like this is really bad, and is possibly as bad or worse than the Iron Passage. But did not end up taking that spot. So I'm with you. Also bad. Are we on 5?
You're on 5.
My number 5 is the Profaned Capital. from Dark Souls 3, which is, there's some kind of cool stuff that happens in it, but it has the part of it that is indoors and building related is so slight as to be like meaningless. And you know, so it's like 3 rooms. There's no sense of like culture or anything that you really get from this other than that, like, you know, the actual event of the Profane Flame, and a little bit of a relationship between these headdress ladies and the Aerithel dungeon. and how they get to. But the big area, the thing that frustrates me the most about it is the gigantic section with the church and the toxin pit.
Sure. Yeah.
Which I hate having to move through toxic. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that like that's too harsh of a status ailment to like just have around like that. And then having that just be it, like having going through that section, going through the building section, just like, okay, I killed 1,000 mimics and got a bunch of rusty coins for some fucking reason and killed, you know, just a dozen of these, you know, ladies with knives. And then I go fight the endless rat pit and the toxin pit. And, you know, it just doesn't add up to anything. I don't have a strong sense of culture or sense of place from this area. And then I also have negative associations with the boss and stuff from this area as well. But we won't get into that now.
I'm just going to have to like bite my tongue and just say like through gritted teeth, like, I disagree.
Do you like the area or just the boss?
I like the area that you're talking about. Like, moving through toxic kind of sucks, but I really liked exploring that area. I really like the enemies that you see there. I like a lot of the stuff that you're pulling from it. Like, you know, they have all the
hand monsters.
Yeah, the hand monsters.
The hand monsters I'm into.
The NPC there is really cool. Like the weird sorcerer dude with the hammer. That guy's awesome.
Even the weird Logan stuff here, I mean, it's part of like associations are weird, so it makes it hard to do an objective one of these lists because areas are defined by like what's in them, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like the but having the weird ties to Logan here drove me fucking mad because every area in Dark Souls 3 has ties to Logan somehow. There's like crystal sorcerers that are in Farron's Keep and in the archives, and like these like all these little bits that tie to the same thing, but without doing anything, you know? So it was the idea that like, how is Logan related to this? We just know that he's around somehow, you know, but we don't know how. And this was an area where that felt very concentrated in a way that like, I mean, like you, like it is not, I, you know, don't want to say a developer's lazy, but it feels like Mad Libs to me, you know, like, oh, let's throw a sorcerer in here and have him have some ties to Logan.
Sure.
You know, and that mm-hmm. sucks. You know, I don't like that. Like, that bugs me. So it's that, and then just the fact that I was expecting to explore like a community, a culture. Like, this is one of the Lords of Cinder's seats. I want to see this other world, and I didn't have that feeling leaving from it.
I will say that if you read the item descriptions for all the profaned flame stuff, you get the mm-hmm. idea that you should have been like moving through a city. Like a burnt out city. Like, I think that would have been a lot cooler as opposed to like what you end up with, which is a couple of churches and like that weird run up with another fucking Lord vessel shooting fireballs for some reason. Like,
it does feel unfinished. Like the same way that people talk about Izalith feeling unfinished, I feel like this feels unfinished.
Sure.
In a way that kind of bums me out. So,
well, number four for me is the Demon Ruins from Dark Souls 3.
Oh man, check this out. I wish I had a bell because that's my number four too. So we can just talk about it.
Nice. Yeah, this area, I think like the very first person I knew to call this area the Chalice Dungeons of Dark Souls 3 was Sean on Slack, account 404. Mm-hmm. And man, that image just, it's very striking because the things that I like about the Chalice Dungeons are not present in the Demon Ruins. And man, the stuff that I kind of hate about the Chalice Dungeons are totally present in the Demon Ruins. There's some real garbage enemies in this area. It's I complained about the like a series of boxes connected by paths. Like, a lot of that, they waste what I think is the only double illusory wall in the game mm-hmm. for like a staff. That's just a callback, more callbacks to the chaos, whatever. Like, you get, I think, Beatrice's staff, which mm-hmm. of all the people to make a callback to, like Beatrice from Dark Souls.
A non-character.
And don't get me wrong, I like that chick a lot. Like, I always take her down to the Four Kings with me, but like, it's not like there's a lore on Beatrice. So it's really weird to have like that staff back. There's curse frogs that I don't really care about. There's a lot of that thing where, hey, there's a lava pool, let's put some items in it so that you have to go out of your way for fire resistant stuff. That they did that in Dark Souls 2 and I kind of hated it there. Like, and I don't
they
like
do it
here
in Demon Souls too. Like, it's a big Demon Souls problem. Yeah,
I don't get into that at all. And then man, like so many like dead Capra demons running around. Like, just. It is Capra demons, right? Yeah.
There are all kinds of demons who are hanging around. Like, there are Capra demons and Taurus demons in like piles. Kind of around.
The only thing that I like is that at one point you go to a room and there's a black knight like trying to kill all of these demons. And I think it would have been incredibly cool if they had pulled a, like, you know, Demon Souls 1-2 and had your, had that Black Knight been your bro. But instead, he just aggroes on you. Like, if he followed you around killing demons, that would have been the coolest fucking thing ever. But instead, like, it's just, you know, hey, it's another Black Knight. Got to kill it.
It's like, Black Knights hate demons. What the fuck are Black Knights even doing in this game, though? Like, it doesn't, you know, it's, and who killed the demons? You know, like, there's like these weird kind of, some hints and some lore suppositions that it was like the people from, like the Abyss Watchers, did it. But then the Gru are here and they're there and they're guarding the Abyss Watchers. So like, there's not, this area has such a poorly explained kind of thesis to it, like, other than the fact that, like, oh yeah, the chaos has been this weird kind of thing we've always had in the series. I think it was in like the most recent Vaadi video where he like pointed, like, kind of underlined for me exactly how poorly the chaos has been explained as a thing throughout the entire series. Like, we get that they, you know, tried to make a flame and there were demons, and in Dark Souls 1 that's good, right? Like, it's like, that's fine. You know, like,
makes perfect sense.
Science went wrong, but feeling like it had to be this kind of like thing that needed to be wrapped up just felt a little bit like an answer to a question I wasn't asking, you know, like, and then just who these Gru are, who are these people who are here? And they're so frustrating to fight, like the, just really, really fast, aggressive enemies with unlimited stamina. And then down the hall, there are snipers that create turrets, you know, the, like, it is the all the fights here suck so bad.
They're just like, I mean, and like having multiple, like, I think in one area there's like four of them, and I just like, oh, hey, there's a glowy over there. I'll just suicide over there until I get the glowy and can get back out again. Like, that was what, this was the point of the game where I started like making suicide runs past shit because I was getting so frustrated with dodging past it. Yeah.
It's really frustrating. And to make things worse, like, the one boss that's in this area, you don't have to go down here. I thought you actually had to go down here. And when I left the Demon King's arena back onto Smoldering Lake, the huge what the fuck. Like, real, like, drop the controller, like, oh, I didn't have to do that?
Yeah.
I mean, I had to because I was exploring it. But the fact that, like, there's literally nothing down here except for a couple of pieces of equipment and a little, like, a lore thing that's, like, the first time I saw a bunch of dead Capra demons, it has a little bit of that power that, like, when you fight the, you know, the copy-pasted Capra demons and Demon Ruins 1, a little bit of that, like, oh, shit, this was such a big deal to me and something has killed all of them. But then it just keeps going and going well past when the point is made. Towards like, I fucking get it.
It feels like, know? That that Adult Swim video, Too Many Cooks, right? Like, it's
yeah, it just keeps going.
I kept thinking like I was gonna find the thing that had killed all of these Capra demons. Like, I thought that was gonna be the boss of this area, but like,
that, how cool would that have been? You know,
right?
Or like, you know, when you're talking about the Black Knight being your bro, what if like when we get here, like, so if the Black Knights are the ones who took out the demons, right? Which I don't think is the case. It's the Fading Flame that killed the demons. But if there's something like fighting them. What if like the war is going on? You know, that would have been a strong concept for this and would have papered over a lot of the problems with the layout, the level design of just hallways and corners, where like, you know, multiple rooms there are Black Knights who are fighting demons.
Sure.
You know, like, you are a third party here. There's actually something going on when you get here. That would have been really cool. Not that they didn't do that. Instead, they just made a bunch of like real fucking boring hallways and the same thing over and over. So
I will say, too, you mentioned, like, having to go down here for the boss. I didn't do that. Like, apparently you can fall through the roof and get down here, and I did not do that at all. Like, I'd actually made it past the weird sandworm and killed the boss of the arena first before ever going down here into the demon ruins. And so, like, I was expecting, like, I was like, well, that's a weird placement for a boss that I could just walk up to, and I kept expecting to find the actual boss. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought I'd found the moonlit butterfly, and I was going to find my Sif down here at some point. But, like, no. Just, yeah, not there. So.
It's such a mess.
I know.
What a mess. What a shame.
Well, now you know you can't invite me on the Bonfire Side Chat episode of that, because we just covered it. We're done.
It might still happen. We might. We have to get through it. We're dutiful, if nothing else.
So my number three is going back to Dark Souls 2, and I think actually my list is Dark Souls 2 heavy. I didn't actually count up what areas, but I'm going to go back to Harvest Valley. This is again one of those areas where I think that is very boring to play through. The enemies they're kind of dumb, I guess. And when they're not just haphazardly placed, like, there's that one little side path with, I don't know, like 10 executioner guys that chase you around in like a big, like,
yeah, the little ambush room.
Yeah, that sucks. That's horrible. And then like the guys, the little dudes that ride on the big guys and shoot the weird fireballs at you, like, that's fine, but like, they just don't do anything with them. Like, I wanted that to be much more interesting. Like, if I killed one of them, like, the little dude would jump down and become an enemy or something. But it just ends up being like, I don't have to fight them at all because they're so slow and their aim is so poor. I just literally walk by them. And then, like, once you get past this, you're mostly into Earth and Peak, and I don't... Even the in-house versions of Harvest Valley, where you're like, there's the poison pit and the poison, they have canisters of poison laying around for some reason, mm-hmm. like, that you can roll through. It's just very boring. And then again, you get back to Dark Souls 2 color palette, and it's very green. It's a very brown. It just kind of, I hate that I keep going back to boring, but like, that's kind of what makes my list. I think it's a very boring level.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like Earth and Peak, but I don't think you're necessarily wrong.
I like Earth and Peak.
I'm sorry.
Harvest Valley. Yeah, yeah. Earth and Peak is fine, because I had to do that too. I was like, where is the separation here? But like, once you get into the weird tower with all of the
clockwork, like
the clockwork stuff happening, I'm all in. Yeah. I like that, but I don't dig anything leading up to that.
Yeah, I can kind of get into Harvest Valley. Like, I ended up having fun. Like, one. Whatever this, like, this poison thing that's keeping Mytha alive that she's using, I like the way that this did feel to me, and this is subjective because I don't think it felt this way to you, but like, it felt like there was a process going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't fighting guardians, I was interrupting work. Mm-hmm. You know? And the you know, you see the bodies, like the bodies at the bottom of the poison thing are reanimating. These are the people who are harvesting it. You have those gigantic guys, you know, moving. Presumably, you never see them move rocks or anything like that. But I always imagine those giant slave masters, like, you know, mining essentially, like creating, you know, finding these wells of this poison. And then, you know, the guys with the blades, you know, are the like wear the robes and stuff, like they're wearing work clothing. Mm-hmm. Or the aprons, you know. So I had the sense of like, oh, I'm interrupting an operation here, which I really liked that. You get a little bit of that in Seldora as well. Something that's going to give a lot of goodwill to me in a Dark Souls area is if I feel like it's a place that makes sense and something is happening when I get there.
You're not a part of. I really dig that too. It just didn't work for me here. And here's my last thing on Harvest Valley is it's possibly the worst sunlight altar placement.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, and I almost had when I was copying and pasting location names into my spreadsheet, Dark Souls 3, the Wikipedia had the sunlight altar as its own discrete location. Mm-hmm. And it was gonna make the list if it had a title card and it was just that little room in Dark Souls 3. Like, I would say that's the dumbest shit I've ever seen in my life. But it doesn't have its own title card, so I had to remove it off the list. But this is also like, yeah, we just need it somewhere. Just go put it over there that's like kind of close to a bonfire, but not really. I don't care. Just put it over there somewhere. Like, there's some statues on the ground. Like, I don't know. This area really irks me.
It's not a, that sunlight altar placement there is pretty shitty. Like, it's not my favorite thing either. So before, you know, someone calls me out for being a, you know, hypocrite for liking it when Dark Souls 2 does it. I don't like that specific callback at all there. And it's also that one. Having something that specific, like the kind of callbacks when people do the internet thing of saying that any amount of hypocrisy means you're a bad person and are not to be listened to. What they're saying is that like, oh, you like the callbacks in Dark Souls 2. You didn't like them in Dark Souls 3. They're pretty different. And what it comes down to is that feeling of like aeons passing versus 40 years passing.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the sunlight altar in Dark Souls 2 is that like enough time has passed, but the sunlight altar is in a specific place. So it ties the location. You know, it's a problem that number 3 has as well, where there's a sunlight altar in Dark Souls 3 that, like, I mean, I guess they could have like dug it out and moved it up here, you know, but it's just it makes a one-to-one location thing and invites too strong a comparison. So you're not filling in blanks with your imagination. You're like kind of, you know, there's an answer. You just don't have it.
Yep.
As opposed to there being, you know, solving for X and X can be anything. My number 3 is the Nightmare Frontier.
The first Bloodborne appearance on the
first Bloodborne appearance, but not the last.
Spoilers. It is,
I think that, I mean, when you're the Nightmare Frontier, it, for me, is very similar to how Harvest Valley is to you, where it's like a big, terrible color palette.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a really, really huge area, like a huge, boring area that is full of bullshit. Like when you first start out, it's fine. You know, you fight the wolf, like electric wolf things. You fight a couple of hunters. It's good. But then you get down to like the Aboleths down in the poison, like unending poison swamps. You start running into winter lanterns here. A bunch of bullshit traps where like they just put you down with winter lanterns, which is a death sentence. And it just takes forever to get through. Like I actually like Amygdala. I like the like weird foliage here that looks like alien fungus, but the actual area itself, I have negative amounts of fun in. It's like a cool idea that they forgot to make fun. And especially when you go into other nightmare areas of the game that are actually super badass. Like I love the, even though it's really, really, small, I really like the lecture hall. Mm-hmm. I really like the Nightmare of Mensis.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are really, really good. This is just like, and even in the DLC, like when the nightmare is invading in the real world, like I like that a lot as well. This just feels like a big brown, boring poison shit show. It's my least favorite poison area of actually the entire series. So I like this less than I like the gutter or Blighttown or Valley of Defilement or any of those things. I think this is the worst poison level.
I can't really, and I don't, it's not really my place to argue with you on that or anything, but like I understand all that and like I agree with a lot of it, but it just doesn't bother me. Like maybe it's just the exact opposite of the Harvest Valley thing where you were like, yeah, I'm kind of dig this, but I don't know, like the weird surreal atmosphere and like looking off into the distance and seeing like just kind of weird stuff on the horizon and like all these weird critters and even the winter lanterns, which I think this might be the first time that I encountered a winter lantern for the first time. And like, that was just so bizarre and crazy. Like it took me a while to learn how much bullshit it is. But when I first saw it, I was like freaked out. And like, that's the kind of thing that I come to Souls games for, is getting like freaked out and scared. So
yeah.
Yeah, I agree, but like it didn't make my list.
In my world, like that feeling that, it just gets evoked so much better in other areas.
That's true.
You know, so like there's nothing that this area does that's the best that any area does it in this game, I think. So that feeling of being kind of weirded out and freaked out, like I was already there because I have to go through the lecture hall to get there. Like the way I got here was being picked up by an amygdala. You know, I'm already freaked out and scared. And then just when I get there and just have it being like a poison swamp full of like fish monsters, you know, for so much of the geography, just ended up bumming me out.
Mm.
So, yeah. What is your number two, Jeremy?
My number two is, and going back to Dark Souls 2 again, The Frigid Outskirts.
Oh, yeah. It's going to appear on my list. Just a spoiler as well.
Just a couple of seconds. Yeah, this is the co-op challenge run, whatever you want to call it, for the Curse of the Ivory King, which is Crown of the Ivory King, excuse me, which is otherwise an amazing level. Like, I love it a lot, but oh boy, is this area just full of fucking bullshit. The whole gimmick is that you're basically in the middle of a blizzard, which sounds like it should be cool because the blizzard is like blowing real hard and then it will die down. And when it dies down, you have visibility so that you can kind of make it to your next way. Where the bullshit comes in are these horse reindeer enemies that shoot lightning at you, I think, and seem to have infinite stamina and come from all different directions and sometimes gang up on you. And then even once you get to what should be an area of protection, like your first little outcropping of buildings, like they're still coming for you. Like there's no respite to it. So you go through all of this, you get to the end, and then like there's not really anything there. Like the ending is just, you know, it does the Sanctuary Guardian thing. It's like, oh, you had fun fighting one, now fight two of like another boss that's in that area. And I'm just not into it. Like I've tried to go through and tried to appreciate it with like different builds and like, well, maybe I'll just like turn off all the lights and get really into it. And yeah, this is garbage. Like I just feel like it's the worst playing Souls level. Well, the second worst playing Souls level.
I think it's the worst playing Souls level. It's my number one. I'm gonna hold off comment. So my number one isn't an anticlimax, but I have very little to add what you said, but that is spoiler. That's actually my number one. Oops. So that we'll get there in a moment. My number two is chalices. Just in general, I put them all together because, you know, it would have been the things that I dislike about them are all the same.
So we
did a whole episode about this, but like it is there's good things to be had in them. You know, it's not my number one because like Bloodborne is a fun game to play no matter what. Like if you're controlling your hunter, that feels good in your hands. So like the worst Bloodborne level, it still feels good to move around in, but the things that the chalices don't do anything that I like about Souls games, except for roughly half the bosses, maybe less, you know, are new and cool. But most of it is just like really like long unending hallways, real tedious trips to go get more chalice materials to play more chalices. You know, lots and lots of just like rooms full of enemies with treasure I don't care about on the other side. And just seeing the same room over and over and over, like, you know, going through like one of the reasons why I like playing a Souls game is I want to see like what's, you know, what's on the other side of that hallway. You know, it's going to be a thing. And like, even when it's nothing great, like I spent a bunch of time in, say, like in Anne Orlando, like looking at the paintings and stuff in the residential part of Anne Orlando. It just felt like these like cool tantalizing clues that were telling me something about the world and had a sense of place. There's none of that in the chalices. Like the idea that narratively this is supposed to be sold to me as the ruins of a culture is bonkers, because there's no sense of culture to this. It's a couple it's like a crypt. You know, there's like some treasure rooms for pharaohs or what have you, it feels like. But there is no sense of these people, who they are, what they did, what they valued. There's no sense of place to the chalice dungeons. And that is why they are my number two worst Souls area.
I should have got a soundboard for this. That would make this thing way more interesting. Wah, 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 wah. Number one for me is the quintessential most hated Dark Souls level of all time, which is the Lost Eyes of Lith. It gets on this strictly, well, not strictly, but a major point in its kind of terribleness is that it's literally unfinished. Like, you can say things, you can say that like levels are unfinished, but like in this one, you can actually see where the geometry like isn't connected to the world in some places. Like, there's some real like, come on guys, how did you even release this type stuff? But actually, you know, just some of this stuff just doesn't even make sense. Like, the shortcut, quote unquote, is like just kind of a, again, it gets back to the boring stuff of like, there's just, the enemies aren't very fun to fight. The only really interesting enemy, and I don't remember the name of it, is that like,
it's weird, like Chaos Eater, my friend.
Chaos Eater. Thank you. I knew it was a cool name. But that's, they're trivial. They're trivial. So like, they're not even like, they're fun if they happen to catch you and like put you in their hat mouth. Like, that's a good time. Yeah. That's a good time for everybody. But like, if they don't do that, then you're just like three or four hits and they're dead. Siegmeier's down here and one of the weirder quest lines of any, you know, NPC in the game, fighting said hat mouth creatures. And that's fine, I guess. Like, I don't particularly find any of that stuff interesting. Like the floor fell through and now you're down here having to kill some people. Like, I don't know. They do that earlier in the game, so I kind of feel like it's just more bullshit here. And then, of course, the boss itself of the level is not particularly satisfying in any kind of way. So, yeah, Lost Eyes of Lith is my number one most hated Dark Souls level.
I actually kind of like Lost Eyes of Lith. I've never been on board with hating it as much as most of the back half Dark Souls 1 stuff. Partly because it looks like an old temple, you know, like it looks like what it is, like the aesthetic. Once you get past the lava part, which I think is bullshit, and you get to the overgrown vine part, I think that actually looks like a place. Like it feels good. And then it is, for me, like part of the appeal is, even though what you actually do with Sigward and the trap part of it is not particularly interesting, this is like the articulation point of like his quest, which is my favorite thing. This is the point where you actually make you, it's the final straw, whether you like take away his sense of purpose or not. And that's, I really love that, you know, and the fact that it's so complicated where it's like, you can't just say like, oh, I saved him. Oh, I didn't. It's not a binary video game thing. Yeah. You know, like your goal is not to save him. Your goal is to make him feel like he saved himself. And that's a really sophisticated kind of goal, I think, for one of these games. So that just ends up getting a lot of goodwill. The Chaos Eater is my favorite Dark Souls monster as well.
Okay.
Just of all time. So like, I really love those.
Like just the design, because I find them like the design. So, yeah. Okay. Cause they're so easy to kill. Like I would be way more interested in these as monsters if they were like, you know, had a more interesting moveset or like would pose any more of a threat, but it's just like all the weird floating statue things that come after you with the fire breath. Like those guys don't pose any kind of threat either. So
yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing too. They're not like a fun fight.
Yeah.
They're just my favorite. Yeah. They're my favorite visual design. Like, as far as Dark Souls is doing weird stuff, like, it's, they look a little cartoony, you know, like in, when Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3 came out, like, I like a lot of the goofy designs. I like those hand hippos.
Mm-hmm.
But they're a little bit like, okay, well, they've got, you know, 1,000 different eyes for teeth. And like, it's a little bit like over the top.
Mm-hmm.
The Chaos Eater feels, to me, like it's on the perfect like balancing point of like goofy but also cool looking and alien looking. You know, it doesn't look like a notebook drawing, which I can dig that notebook drawing thing. Like, I love, you know, I love the hand hippos, but the Chaos Eater is my apex for those things. So there's too many things for me to like about Lost Izalith. And then I've also never hated the boss fight as much as everyone else does. Like, I don't think it's good. I think it's kind of bullshit, but I don't hate it, you know.
See, I don't like the Dragon God fight. And I think the Bed of Chaos is worse than Dragon God. Like, it's just,
I mean, they're both bad. Like, they're not, the only thing that they're good for is sense of scale, right? So like you, this is a big, cool metal as shit chaos demon made of roots and fire. Like, it looks amazing. And you do that little slide down there and it's like a really cool presentation.
Oh, see, that slide is so goofy that like your character just looks like a dummy. Oh my God.
It is. I mean, I guess like the slide itself is not the cool part. I'm talking about, I guess, more the anticipation of when you get that first, like the first splash image of the Bed of Chaos is incredible. I really, really love it.
And you gotta actually like when you start freeing its limbs and it starts going crazy. Like, that's
it's really cool.
It's just not fun to play at all.
No, it's not. And they could have done it so much easier. Like, I'm not I don't need it to be hard to be good. And you know, that's, I keep bringing that up. But like, the way to make this easier would be to make the consequence for failure not instant death. Like, just don't make it pits. Like, if it didn't open up, if the pits didn't kill you, if it just like inconvenienced you or something like that.
Or you could only land in the pits 3 times before they broke or something. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You could still get up back to the top or something.
Yeah, something like that. Like, just make it not death and then put a bonfire right outside it. You know, would have made this like, no, people wouldn't hate this boss nearly as much as they do, I think.
Yeah.
So it's I end up actually kind of liking Izalith. And my number one, though, is the Frigid Outskirts, which we talked about a little bit. But like, you know, I mostly echo what you said. But the reason why it got my number one spot is that they made a area that has one of the stronger concepts of an area in the game, and something they haven't done. Like, Dark Souls has done several things where they play with visibility to varying degrees of success. So like, you know, it's dark in the Valley of Defilement. Mm-hmm. You fight the Lost Sinner, and it's dark in that arena unless you change it, and it changes your lock-on distance. You go to the Shaded Woods and there are semi-visible phantoms. They played with visibility. They never totally occluded it, though. Even like, you know, the Giants, Tomb of the Giants, like, you know, you come in there with a way to see.
Yeah.
You know, but this idea of like, we need to actually, one, we want you to be blind. Two, we want to get you like lost, you know. And they somehow took that idea that I think is actually pretty strong and forgot like anything compelling about the gameplay of it.
Yeah.
Like, how, like, if you fought more interesting things, or check this out, what if there aren't enemies down here and people are dying because they get lost? You know, like, you could have instilled a really cool feeling in the player of like, you know, you travel from place to place, you're trying to find your way through this snow. Hey, here's a corpse of somebody who got lost before, who got shunted down here in this coffin. And then you walk around and then you see the same corpse and it's like, oh, did I get turned around? Like, is this, I have no idea where I'm at.
Sure. Yeah.
You know? But you never have a chance to feel when you're in the frozen outskirts, because you're constantly assaulted by these surprise lightning reindeer. Like, you just never have a chance to get the actual expression that I think they were trying to do with it.
They decided to like harry the player the entire time as opposed to just letting the player experience it.
And like, you know, areas without enemies, areas with non-aggressive enemies and stuff like that are always like awesome to me. They're always going to stand out. And it's something the series is really missing and has been for a long time, I think. I also would have liked to have more structures. Like, the idea of exploring this town that has been destroyed by snow and stuff would have been really, really cool. It got reclaimed, you know, by the winter. That would have been really great. But there's like 3 buildings and there's almost nothing in them, you know. So it ends up being a real bummer. And then, I know this isn't bosses, but for the whole thing, just to show up and just have a boss that you've already fought that like is such a pain in the dick to fight. Like, this is the worst boss run in the game too.
Oh, easily. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, in the series, like, it is, just makes it, you know, and I love Ilium Loyce. Like, I love this whole DLC, but this is egregious. I like it less than Chalice Dungeons. So, like, if that tells you anything, like, I have, you know, I'm entering into, like, hour three now of bad-mouthing Chalice Dungeons on the podcast as we speak, and I think the Frigid Outskirts are worse.
Actually, probably so. Be, like, hour four or five if you count the duck stream that we did.
Oh, shit. Yeah, man. Yeah, that's lots of so they are not my favorite thing. I think this is worse.
I hadn't really thought about like the way you would change this level to make it better, but like this is begging for like a frostbite status effect that would just basically, you know, apply poison to you like until you get to a bonfire to literally warm yourself up. Like it would have broken it unless there was just, because you know, the warping and Dark Souls 2, like as soon as you found the bonfire in front of the boss, like you would never have to do it again. But that actually kind of sounds fun. Like, let me die 3 or 4 times while I'm trying to figure it out, because I'm not with enemies attacking me, but with my health just draining because I'm so fucking cold and lost. Like, that would have been really, really cool.
The more something that, like, as much as this is my favorite video game series of all time, like something that I don't think they do a great job of is trying to find new ways to like challenge you that are not just enemies. And as the series goes on, it's just like enemies get tankier and bigger and have more stamina, and that just kind of continues. And there, whenever there's an example in any of these games of like a way they're trying to challenge you otherwise, like looking at something like I really love the level in Bloodborne. I really love the research hall, and one of the reasons why I love the research hall is that like some of the enemies are kind of tough, but that's not the point. It's like a navigation challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like challenge me in ways other than just combat. Like, I get it, it's a combat action game, but like, you know, this kind of quiet dignity, this feeling, this aesthetic that the series is known for, there's so many different ideas within that sphere to kind of try to express. And I would just like to see a wider variety, you know?
Absolutely agreed. Yeah. So, I mean, I think a less combat focused and more, like, and I hate to say, like, because if you take the action out of action RPG, what do you just have like a normal RPG, but like, I've always been fascinated with pacifist runs in games of not actually like attacking anything, but just trying to make your way through the world and like, or indirectly attacking things. And I really would like them to, you know, put more of an effort into building those into either levels or bosses or whatever. Like I would like to see more of that.
Yeah. I don't want a pacifist option for the entire game. I just want there to be a couple of things that you can do that with.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Just like early on, something that's happened in these Souls games, and it's one of the reasons why like I'm kind of all right if, you know, they take a break or end it, is that like early on, I felt like most of the areas, you know, in the first season of Dark Souls or Bonfire to the Chat, like every area had a thesis, you know, and it felt like every area was about something. And somewhere along the way that got lost, you know, like it, in the design, it wasn't like we stopped calling them out. It was, we stopped being able to find them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what's the thesis of the Cathedral of the Deep? What's that level about? It's a big church.
It's a big church,
you know, like the big church with some bad guys in it. Like there's nothing, it's not about anything. And like bosses and areas that are used to be about something, even when they're not super difficult, like those I respond to. It's like, I really love Priscilla. Priscilla is not super hard, but Priscilla has a real like strong gimmick and concept that like will really do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Storm King has a really strong gimmick and concept that really does it for me. And I miss that. And instead, it's just like everything has to be balls hard.
Well, it's the same thing with enemy placement. And that's where a lot of the like co-op, that's why there's like 2 or 3 of the co-op side levels on my list. It's the worst levels because there's no rhyme or reason to the enemy placements. Like it's just, let's just put a bunch of enemies around and like they're all going to aggro the player. And that's, you know, like Dark Souls 1 kind of sold me on like there's these enemies and they're here and they're placed strategically so that you have to deal with them in a certain way, or have to deal with them in any one of a number of certain ways that you can deal with them. And that's really, really interesting. But you can get to an area where, hey, there's, you know, 5 black knights, or there's, I don't know, it's not an actual real thing, but like 5 of those sunken knight dudes, the kind of greenish guys, like they're just all down there. Go kill them. Like it's just kind of like, it's like it's like a wave-based shooter thing, like where you just like enemies just come at you. You know what I'm saying?
Like a Robotron or like a Sierra Sam or something like that.
Yeah, where like there's no, like it's literally just reflexes at that point. And that's,
I don't like it either. And it's not, you know, those challenge areas in Dark Souls 2, which are balanced, you know, again, balanced for co-op. We recognize that before people like call us out, but like that's part of it. It's not just been that. Like they've been doing that kind of the whole time. Like, there are areas in Dark Souls 3 where it's like, oh, I'm down in the basement of the Earthhill dungeon. Here's 1,000 of these jailkeepers.
Yeah.
You know, here's 1,000 of this thing. Like, I sympathize with the idea behind it, and you know, it's hard for me to think of good ways to ramp this up. I'm not a game designer, though, so that's kind of not my job. You know, like, it is, it's, I'm a critic, and it just ends up being less satisfying to me, you know. And it's going to be a thing where it's like, as much as we're in the future of Bonfireside Chat, we're moving into some areas that I think are very strong overall. This problem permeates the rest of Dark Souls 3 for me, where there's just like, oh, like the high wall, like Lothric Castle, here's just like 1,000 guys with a billion hit points. You know, you can't, it's not enough to fight one of these like Red Eye Knights at once with a healer. Here's 2 of them. You know, like, it just keep amping it up. And like that bloat is such a, like a gross thing to me. And I get it. And there are probably, for every, you know, person like me or you who like doesn't want the series to go that way, there are people who would be disappointed if it didn't get harder. You know, like there are people for whom like playing this game is like climbing a mountain. And that's just, I just don't relate to that. It's just not what I get out of it.
The that dude that makes videos, Neo Loki, I think you're familiar with that dude. He told me one time that it's like Dark Souls started out as like the kind of cool edgy kid, like in high school, and then like got in with the jocks, and now all of a sudden he's like the swinging dick on campus, fucking all the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
and that imagery really worked for me, because it's like, yeah, like you look at the marketing now and it's all like, it's gonna make you die. And yeah, like that's not what was ever appealing to me about these games. No. So yeah.
So again, it would be, you know, very, very cool. Like, you know, do the series, move it in a different direction. But whatever that direction is, like, just I wish it was, get away from this marketing idea that, like, you know, this game fucks. Like, just like let it be, concentrate on this, like, these weird, beautiful environments and this like wonderful storytelling and these like tragic characters, and just get away from this, like, we are going to make you break your controller stuff. Cause like those games, I have, like, you know, there's like, I Want to Be the Guy, like those games exist and stuff, and they're good for what they are. But like, having it mixed with other stuff I want more than that is a real bummer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like having to choke down this thing that I don't want to get the thing that I do want, is disheartening a little bit. So, yeah. And I'm sure we'll end up talking about that in the next one of these specials, or whichever one we do the bottom bosses on.
Yeah.
That's a big problem with, like, if I'm going to hate a spoiler, if I'm going to hate a boss, it's going to be because it's bullshit hard, not because it's too easy. Oh, you know, man. Like
your bottom bosses are going to be like all of the bosses in Bloodborne, like, because Bloodborne is so bad about that with like the overinflated hit points.
Yeah, it's not going to be all the ones in Bloodborne, but Bloodborne will definitely make an appearance, because that's one of the bosses is one of the things I think is not great about Bloodborne.
Sure.
Which a game, it's like, even in my mind, has like been aging a little bit better. You know, like I like Bloodborne a lot. I love Bloodborne. It was like, you know, I love Bloodborne, but it's like coming off of it, looking back on it and kind of reflecting with Dark Souls 3 coming out, which is what I kind of thought I wanted, was like, let's get back to castles and shit. Seeing kind of like, well, you know what? There's actually a lot of things that did with its storytelling and main plot that was simpler and stronger than this. Like, that felt finished.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some parts of Dark Souls 3 definitely don't, you know, but the bosses I think are not particularly good in Bloodborne on a whole. Anywho, like I'm going to end up talking about that a lot. Like, just hardness for hardness's sake.
I'm with you 100% for like, oh hey, this would be really fun if it wasn't so goddamn hard, or
if it wasn't a million years. This is a weird, it's gonna sound like me just shoehorning in a pet subject, but like, that's a big problem I had with Undertale, was getting to bosses and just having them last forever. Like, I don't know if you played that game, but like,
I didn't.
A lot of the bosses just like have, you know, 3 or 4 times as many hit points as I think that they should have.
So I have this thing with this exact same problem with Enter the Gungeon, which is a game that I love the aesthetic of. Like, my favorite rapper of all time did like 90% of the music and the game noises in it. So like, it's all of the stuff, it should appeal to me directly, but I can barely even get to the boss of the second level. And like,
yeah.
I'm not bad. I'm just, it's just so fucking hard.
No, Gungeon is too hard. It's got that, like, I mean, that's, we talk about that in Comrade all the time, but nobody has cracked the Isaac formula where like, the trick is give the player health.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You never get health pickups in Gungeon, and you never get health pickups in Nuclear Throne, and you never get health pickups in, like, the first person one that we did. Like, whenever somebody does an Isaac-like, they make health really, really hard, because what they're taking away from it is that Isaac is hard, so this should be hard.
Yep.
But that's like, just difficulty is never going to be, that's not a good design goal. Yeah, you know,
it's way easier, it's way more fun and way more accessible to make your game like give the player the ability to survive it, and then slowly but surely make it harder for them, or like have that yeah. just be a difficulty setting. Like, you, it's not, doesn't work, have to work for everybody. Like, you know, twice yeah. as much health drops in a level, and you've solved a problem. Like, I could probably get through that game at that point. Anyway.
Or just, and if you don't, if that's compromising your vision, throw in a difficulty selector. Like, one of the things I love about Darkest Dungeon is the fact that the developer makes their difficulty so modular. So, like, if you want their, like, balls hard vision of the game, you can do it. It's no problem. But you also go in the options and turn off some of those things that are going to be really big frustrations. Like, if you, at the beginning of the game, you could be like, you know what, I'm going to play this on normal mode. That means I get a reasonable amount of health. But if I want to, I can opt into Iron Man, you know, big dick on campus mode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just let me, you know, and that's, and again, like, webs within webs, because it's one of the things that, like, I feel like everybody, you know, shits on Dark Souls 2, but Dark Souls 2 has my favorite player controlled difficulty of almost any game that's not done through a menu, between the Covenant of Champions and Ascetics.
Yep.
You know, it is so elegant and good. And then to have the game just kind of be like, no, let's actually just make it so it's like your new game plus two Covenant of Champions for the entire game. You know,
yeah.
That bums me out. So I like opting in. I want the choice. Yeah.
And so, this has been your Bonfire Side Chat about game difficulty.
Yes. It's, I mean, it's related, right? Like, it's,
oh,
it's
absolutely
related to the areas, and it's, it makes sense. And thank you. Thanks everybody for listening. Specific thanks to Jeremy. So thank you, Jeremy.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was a great time.
It's fun, right? It was good. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And specific thanks to my Kickstarter backers for Souls of Darkness. You know, this is what I'm doing instead of the audio play, because the audio play was hundreds of hours of work, and I kind of bit off more than I could chew. But hopefully you appreciate these, and I like doing them. I'm looking forward to doing the rest of them. So it's good to get some perspectives that are, you know, Cole is going to be on one of these. So for people who miss Cole, like, you know, we made a lot of jokes in the beginning of the episode about Cole. Jeremy is not wearing his clothes or skin or anything.
I'm cool now.
Yes.
I'm cool.
I can't make my voice deep without making it sound dumb. I wasn't trying to make Cole sound dumb, but I can't do a deep voice without trying to sound like Lauren Bacall.
Well.
I'm not even trying to impersonate Cole. It would just come out insulting. I know for a fact.
So. Yeah. I don't know what that would sound like. Let's not do it. So, Jeremy, where can people find you online?
At JG Greer on Twitter is probably the easiest way to get in touch with me. I do various podcasts. You can go to darkinsight.net to see all of that stuff. There's one general gaming podcast and one specifically related to Dark Souls called Don't Give Up Skeleton. The other one's called Dark Insight. Check out both of those and let me know what you think. And I can always be found on the duckfeed.tv Slack, where I spend, like, that's become my internet home away from home. So,
yeah, it's a real, real good place. So you'll enjoy it. Head on out. Thank you very much. If you want to, the people who this is for have already supported the show, so I'm not going to do, and supported the book, so I'm not going to do a bunch of admin. But thanks for listening. And until next time, Jeremy, what should they watch out for?
Or what should they watch out for waist high ledges.
There we go.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.